JG 1. Number 6B.
Okay, so here we have as an epitome, all science is spiritual. There is no physical science. Well, we've talked about that together. This is a subject that goes from page 125, line 31, to 128, line 3. Gosh, isn't that wonderful? All science is spiritual. There is no physical science. That's the new science. That's what we really know is the new science. She says all science is divine. And she traces all physical effects to a spiritual cause. Gosh, we hard would we ever believe that in even old Christian Science. We were concerned that all physical effects were the result of a physical cause. But to think that all physical effects are the result of a spiritual cause, oh gosh. You can see there that that's quite big teachings, isn't it? She explains cause and effect as being both natural and spiritual. Under the marginal heading of science and Christianity, she says the term science as applied to Christianity. She talks about how if God, the all in all, be the creator of the spiritual universe, including man, then everything entitled to a classification as truth or science must be comprised in a knowledge of God. So, therefore, if God is the all-in-all and the creator of the spiritual universe, including science, then everything under the classification of science must be comprised of a knowledge of God. Otherwise, it can't be called science. If it doesn't have to do with God, it's not science. That only that which it comes under the categories of God is truly scientific. Everything else is pseudo-scientific. Then under the marginal heading of scientific terms, she says that science alone, divine science, spiritual science, Christ science, or Christian science are interchangeable according to the requirements of the context. That these are synonymous terms and stand for everything relating to God, the infinite, supreme, eternal mind. You see how she's giving us the basis of the model of being? How those terms, science itself, divine science, Christ science or Christian science, that those are interchangeable in so fact that they're synonymous terms. They're interchangeable in so fact that they refer to God. But when she calls them synonymous terms, that means that they also have their individual unique meaning. Because synonymous terms mean that things are freely interchangeable, but they also have their distinct meaning. And hence, from this part in the textbook, John Dorley could have his verification for those four levels of spiritual consciousness, of which Max has gone on to elaborate in great detail. Then she shows, however, Christian science relates especially to science as applied to humanity. So then, as we go on, under this heading of principle of spirit, we see then that there is no physical science. That's an old view of science. And under the marginal heading, mortal, nothingness, she shows here that the problem of nothingness will be solved. See, every time she says will be or must be, that's always the Christ. The Christ is always, it must happen, it will happen. She says it all the time. This is showing that there's no way avoiding it. The Christ is going to bring the science of God to us in spite of everything, and it's going to send us through the phase transition. And so therefore, because of the Christ is the Christ in its operation, through the algorithm in its binary twofold flow of translation and retranslation, all problems will be solved. And that's why, and that's the basis on which I wrote the textbook, The Science of the Christ, which solves all problems. The Christ solves the problems, doesn't it? and they're going to be solved, and once they're solved, that's it, huh? And then it's that question of how the angels are ascending and descending, and then finally the Son of God stays in heaven, that we never ascend and descend again. It's just a phase that we're going through. And she says that the problem of nothingness will be solved and found to be without value. Mortal mind will be without form and void. Matter will finally be proved nothing more than a mortal belief. Mortality will cease when man beholds himself God's reflection. That's right now. That's a present possibility. Air will be no longer used in stating truth. She says that the material law, so-called, of the human mind will be without values. That means that they're not quality of God's spirit. But they're really material quantities or things. Material laws are made up of matter and energy, waves and particles. We could call them quantities and things. And that classical science, and that's the old science, only measured quantities and things, like matter and energy, waves and particles. They never measured qualities, like joy and satisfaction. But we can say to ourselves, if we take away joy, satisfaction, beauty, what is there? We live for qualities, don't we? Spiritual values. We don't live for wavelengths and particles. Do we get up every day and say, gee, I'm living for the fact that there are wavelengths and particles out there? We get up and we live for the joy of life, the beauty of life, the exaltation of life. We live, going off from the synonyms, for the information of mind, the intelligence of mind, the evolution of spirit, the patience of spirit, the balance of soul, the joy of soul. We live for the honesty of principle. We live for that progression of life, the exaltation of life, for the divine consciousness, for love, for our integration into everything. This is what we live for, and this is what the spiritual laws bring us. They're based on qualities, but the material laws were based on quantities. It's a science of ideas. That's what the science of God is. That's what she wants to say. The science of God is a science of spiritual values, and that we live for. Then we go on at the marginal heading here, and she shows then that a lack of originality. Therefore, she says, the human mind never projected the least portion of true being, has sought and interpreted in its own way the echo of spirit, so seems to have reversed it and repeated it materially. Never produced a real tone, never set forth a positive sound. So the human mind never even brought forth a science. We saw that today. Science progresses without the human mind, thinking that it was the science that thought the scientists. And it was only those scientists that prepared themselves could catch that melody of the science itself, and those laws of the inner acceleration, inner logic, and inner goal directedness, thought the scientist. It was never up to the scientist in the human mind. That's what she's showing here. It never brought forth anything scientific or anything of value. It was always God that brought the sciences forward. And then the marginal heading, antagonistic questions. She shows that popular theology explains all beyond the cognizance of the material senses as supernatural, as speculative hypothesis. And she says, well, that's not so, that matter is just a falsity of existence, that nerves, brain, stomach, lungs, as matter, have no intelligent sensation. She could also say, therefore, that these physical senses really can't explain anything. And therefore, that popular Theology, she says, explains all beyond the cognizance of the material senses as supernatural. But she's wanting to bring out here then eventually in the soul tone that the spiritual senses will explain everything beyond the cognizance of the spiritual material senses as natural. Under the marginal heading, no physical science, she says, inasmuch as all truth proceeds from the divine mind, therefore truth is not human, is not a law of matter, for matter is not a lawgiver. Christian science eschews what is called natural science insofar as this is built on a false hypothesis, that matter is its own lawgiver, that law is founded on material conditions, and that these are final and are overruled eventually by the might of the divine mind. All right, so the main point there, that all science is divine, there are no physical sciences. All right, now we come to soul from page 128, line 4. Here she gives the epitome, as Max has shown in her work, that Christian science frees the human mind from its limitations and thus enlarges the human capacities. We saw that already, that under the marginal heading, practical science, she shows that the term science, properly understood, refers only to the laws of God and to his government of the universe, including man. Therefore, she shows that Christian science rules the human. So basically, she's showing that Christian science really freed from the human mind in its limitations, enlarges our capacities. So this is where she's showing then that it's that spiritual sense when freed from material sense. It says, really give us, it rules the human and resurrects it. So when we go out from a spiritual sense of being, out from the spiritual senses, and let those interpret the universe, that enhances our endurance and mental powers. It enlarges our perception of character. It gives acuteness and comprehensiveness, ability to exceed ordinary capacity. Haven't we found that ourselves, how science enlarges our capacities, enlarges our perception of character? This going out from principle as soul, from the science of soul, we begin to gain a greater perception of being, a greater ability than we ever realized we had. It exceeds our ordinary capacities. It interprets the universe from spiritual sense rather than how the old sciences always interpreted from physical sense. Testimony. She says, the human mind imbued with this spiritual understanding becomes more elastic, is capable of greater endurance, escapes somewhat from itself, and requires less repose. You know, the only danger I see in our study is if we stop here at the principle of soul tone and we don't go on past that critical 3.5 point and let the divine principle of the universe interpret the universe. Let that fixed principle govern our life through its self-organizing, self-generating system. And so often one can see that students come into our work and they go through the mind, spirit, and soul phase of things. They see that the divine mind is the basis of the universe, that as principle mind, that mind is the basis of all the forces, principle is spirit, that everything is of the nature of spirit, and that they begin to get more enlarged understanding, a greater spiritual understanding. This science begins to enlarge their capacities. It begins to really enlarge in their endurance. She says it enhances their endurance in mental powers. It enlarges the perception of character. It begins to exceed their ordinary capacity. And then they stop with the subject. And you don't see them any longer because they have this terrific enhancement of endurance and mental powers and mental capacity. And then you don't see them any longer because they're satisfied with that. I see that so often, that it comes to that critical point of soul. They've gotten something from science, and then they take and run with it. And go on and read more of the books that come in the world, you see. Get interested then again in all these world isms and ologies and in everything that is happening from an enlarged capacity, you see. And therefore, they are able to, with mind, spirit, and soul already, interpret the universe in quite an interesting way. And it just goes on within their intellect. But they don't go on, they drop it, and don't go on to the principle as principle tone, and go on to give their life back to a fixed absolute principle, and let that principle govern their life, you see. That's what we do. So can you see the danger? I mean, don't we ourselves feel some type of enlarged capacity through science? Hasn't it enlarged our mental capacities? It has. It's given us a lot, hasn't it? Already. Tremendous ability so far. You could go out right now and interpret the universe, couldn't we? But that's not giving anything back to God, isn't it? That's not. That's only taking. But at the point of soul going into principle, it says, now you give back to God. You give back your life to that fixed absolute principle. And now let that take over through its self-operating, self-organizing system. That's what's hard. To let that principle govern and to go for the bigger explanation. The other enlarged capacity will stay within the mental. So as principle is principle, she goes on to show then that we give our life and the science into a fixed absolute principle. And she says that this fixed absolute principle is such that it runs on logical conclusions, and its logical conclusions of that principle are always harmonious. So we give our life back into the logic of events, of that principle. And when we do that, that's always harmonious. So that's not only true of our life, but it's true of a science. A science rests on a fixed and absolute principle. Therefore, its logical conclusions are always harmonious. Under the marginal heading mathematics and scientific logic, she says, science relates to mind, not matter. It rests on a fixed and absolute principle, not upon judgment of false sensation. Then she takes up the question of a syllogism and says that in the science of God, its major propositions and minor propositions are correct. Therefore, its conclusions, if properly drawn, are always correct. Christian science is, and its logic is harmonious. There are no discords. Truth is ever truthful. There is no error in its premise and conclusion. And we will take up this question of logic when we go to the level. And we will see how the logic of Christian science, as given to us through the model of being, rests on this fixed and absolute principle. And we will show and see the logic of the levels, how we have the logic, the infinite logic of science itself, and the logic of divine science, and then the logic of absolute Christian science and the logic of Christian science. How each of those levels show forth a different sense of this scientific logic of God. And then she would go on to the principle as life tone, and shows that science demonstrates ontology. Ontology is that the science of real being and overthrows all other systems which are antagonistic to true being. So under the marginal heading antagonistic theories, she shows here that all those pantheistic theories, and I put some of this into the world belief today, just enlarging what she is saying, that those theories of brain and its holographic universe, of virtual reality, of spiritualism, of animal magnetism, of hypnotism, of mythology, of theosophy, of agnosticism, of pantheism, of infidelity, are all the belief of life in and of the illusion. She shows that they're all the belief that there is life in and of matter, life in and of mind and bodily soul, that God lives in matter, and that these are all overthrown. Eventually, she says, in those days will be great tribulation, such as was not since the world, the beginning of the world. And the earth will echo the cry, Art thou truth, come hither to torment us before the time? Showing that all these antagonistic theories through that progress of life will, and the method of life will take us again through that phase transition and take away and overthrow all these false theories, just leaving the principle of life, the principle of the science of real being, which is the principle of divine ontology, which is what our subject is about. It's big. Isn't this tone of principle? I mean, we're going through it quickly. I only want you to get the tonality to see how just the principle tone is within this chapter has just worlds within worlds of setting the foundation for the science of God. You can hear it. It just has tremendous involvement. We'll keep coming back to it as we go on through the model of being here and there. And you know, as I said, and as you know, when Max took his class in 1987 on the model of being, he kept referring back to this sixth chapter, especially to this principle tone, as the basis for so many of the points that Mrs. Eddy was showing us on the science of all sciences. Here at Principle of Life, in the marginal heading of Ontology Needed, she says, the method of science as the way of life, she says, science has a reformatory mission. She said, we must abandon false theories of life, accepting only the outward sense of things. We must take up ontology, the science of real being, and look deeply into realism. She says, the petty, superficial intellect is alarmed by constant appeals to mind. The licentious disposition is discouraged over the slight spiritual prospect. When all men are bidden to the feast, the excuses come. One has a farm, another has merchandise, and therefore they cannot accept. You see, it all goes against life, not to object, and reject, but to go forward and accept the evolution of life, and not to come with all the excuses of why we can't go the way of life. And we know the excuses. Then I think one of the biggest points at this principle of life tone, which we will be looking at when we work with our exercises on the levels, and I'll come back to it. I'll say, remember what Mrs. Eddy was saying in a general way under the principle of life tone? The principle or science of life, she said, had to do with ontology, and what she shows us is that that is a dimensional ontology. That the science of real being, or the science of real life, or the science of evolution or progress in science, theology, and medicine is a dynamic scientific method. And so here she will show that there is the science, first of all, that reduces the infinite one to a few fundamental categories. That's ontology. Ontology is that which is asking for the basic constituents of reality. but not only asking how to reduce the infinite one to simplicity through a few fundamental yet comprehensive categories of the seven root notions and their fourfold operation on the four levels, but we'll see that ontology also then asks for the other arm of science, the synthesis, uniting all these categories into a network according to laws, based on one fixed principle. But the outcome of this dimensional ontology is that this science of dimensional ontology, through its analysis and synthesis, at that point of synthesis, we get the focal point of spirit, where we really get a dynamic, evolving, nested system, a matrix of infinity. We get that principle of infinity, the principle of life. The principle of life is that within that principle, within that matrix of infinity, within the principle itself, within that fixed principle, it includes methods for the discovery of new truths within its domain. Out of the fixed principle comes life. Out of a fixed principle that is constantly restructuring its ontological categories, springs newness. Principle life. Out of principle, you see, it's a fixed principle, comes life. That's the connection between principle and life